Extra time.
Hello, team, and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast with me and Joseph. It's been a minute, hasn't it, on the Extra Time podcast, Joe? Can you remember the last time you were on it?
I can't, mate. It must have been a fair old while ago now. But you know what? I'm looking forward to this. We're talking about the Euros. The sun is in the sky in the UK. 27 degrees. Got nothing to moan about.
Yeah, I can't remember my own name at the minute. It's about 38 degrees in this pathetic excuse for an office, which I've insulated just in time for the summer. I'm sure those watching will be enjoying my floppy bonnet right now. How are you? You kicking back in your quarters? Got the windows open? Nice and airy in your kitchen?
It is to a level, but it does get a bit greenhousey. So I've got both the windows open at the moment. I am a little bit sweaty. I'm also ginger, so I am slightly afraid of the sun like a vampire. But nevertheless, I'm not going to moan. I've already said in this episode, I'm not going to moan about the heat.
Right, let's move in to this episode then. I am delighted to say that this episode is sponsored by our friends over at Fan Team, who are hosting a record-breaking £1 million Euro 2020 Fantasy Football Extravaganza, where the first place prize is £200,000. Here's the lowdown. It's £20 to enter. You get £105 million of make-believe cash to build your squad. And during the group stages, you can only have three players from any given nation. Harder than it sounds, okay? We first pitched this to you guys on Sunday Vibes. This is a continuation of that. We've now picked our teams and we're going to debate who has the better squad. So this episode, not just a matter of Joe and I agreeing on the best team at the Euros, we've each built our own squad that we'll be putting into said tournament. Now, there are rules, which I don't want to take you through. I'm too hot. I'm too flustered. We'll just, you know, we'll crack through them as we go, Joe, as we break into our sides. Now, what I wanted to ask you first and foremost was, were there any principles that you abided by before you started selection, or did you just dive straight in? Because I actually gave this a bit of thought beforehand.
Well, I've gone for a 3-4-3 formation to capitalise on Fan Team, sort of extra points for midfielders who score goals, etc. So I've gone to try and pack that midfield. My abiding principle, as it is always in fantasy football, is load the first 11 and stick the dross on the bench. I always just pack out my first 11 to the maximum value I can, and then I put the cheapest possible four players on the bench, and I've stuck by that principle firmly, rigidly today. So I've got a pretty strong starting 11 and an absolute dross bench. And just to irritate you, I've put three Scotsmen on the bench. The cheapest three Scotsmen I could find, purely to wind you up. So I've basically got 11 first team players and three Scots.
Yeah, they are chronically undervalued, the Tartan Army. We'll get to that shortly. I've also adopted a similar approach. So I've also gone with a back three, maybe for a slightly more clinical reason than you. And that is because I think the 4 points for a defender who gets a clean sheet is an absolute fallacy. It's a myth, Joe. It's a unicorn. It's a chimera, if that's how you pronounce it. Now, lest we forget, VAR will be present at this edition of the European Championships for the first time ever. Now, in Russia, 14 penalties awarded in the group stage. That was one more than the entirety of Brazil 2014. So I'm expecting more of the same, fewer clean sheets, more drama, more points at the other end of the pitch. Okay? Which is just as well, because Euro 2016 was actually a little bit boring, wasn't it? I think it was only like 2.12 goals per game, which was down on the previous two tournaments. So I'm inviting this level of chaos right now. And yeah, like you said, midfielders still get points for clean sheets. I think it's one for a clean sheet and one for finishing the game, which I imagine is because they are the most frequently substituted. So playing three at the back and just loading your midfield with goal-scoring midfielders, a good tact when you get 4 points for a goal and three for an assist. But I've gone one layer deeper, all right? I've chosen which nations that I want to pick from in defence and in midfield in my first round of picks. Because, of course, you can change it with each match. There's different rules for each round, okay? So my thinking was, pack the back with Spanish and Italian players because they're in relatively easy groups. Then bang Belgian and Dutch midfielders and attackers in there because, you know, also the same logic but obviously the other end of the pitch. And then I ran out of time and I just started shooting from the hip. So you'll see what I mean as we make our way through the squads. Let's start off with our respective goalkeepers.
Okay.
Who you gone for?
I've gone for Hugo Lloris between the sticks. I've gone for Hugo Lloris for those clean sheet bonuses. Obviously, basically won the Golden Glove World Cup 2018, didn't he? Other than that absolute whiffer in the final against Croatia, he would have won it. I think it went to Courtois in the end. But yeah, I've gone for Hugo Lloris. I think France probably have the best back line at the tournament, in my opinion. And I think they're going to be very solid despite being in the group of death. And I do hear you. I think your tactics could well be spot on here. But I don't really want to have to be substituting and transferring out goalkeepers in the later stages of the tournament. So I've gone for one I think is going to go far in the tournament. And yes, he has been a little bit erratic for Spurs at times. But when he puts the gloves on for France, he's a totally different animal. There's a reason he's the captain of his nation. I think back to those games against, you know, Uruguay, against Belgium, in particular, those two clean sheets at World Cup 2018, when he was absolutely spectacular. And he did still keep 12 clean sheets this season for Tottenham. So I've gone for someone I think is going to go deep in goal in the tournament. And there's no denying France are going to go deep in this tournament.
Nice. Yeah, I think that's a fairly safe choice. I've gone for someone at the other end of the spectrum in terms of where they are in their career. I've gone for young Gianluigi Donnarumma of AC Milan. Of course,
that'll
probably change, yes, by the time the tournament's finished. I imagine he'll sign on for Juventus. Utterly boring narrative, that. In my 3-4-3, he is in the sticks. And just to reiterate, you know, some of the scoring systems around goalkeepers, it is 4 points for a clean sheet, two for finishing the game, one for a win bonus, and you get 0.5 per se, which is quite interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, if your goalkeeper is very active, makes eight saves, that is the equivalent of a clean sheet. Yeah. I can't imagine that Donnarumma will be doing too much. They've been pretty tight in qualification. Roberto Mancini has taken, you know, a fallen giant and turned them into a winning machine. I believe the last time he lost was around 28 fixtures ago. And Donnarumma has been a permanent fixture in that rejuvenated Italy squad. And of course, they're facing Finland, Wales and Turkey. Turkey, I think, could be a bit of a wild card, but I think Italy will probably win that group in convincing fashion. Finland also pretty tight in defence, but they only scored 16 goals in qualification. And, you know, if anything happens to Teemu Pukki, I'm not sure if they've even got a striker, basically. Yeah, so I've gone with Donnarumma. I'd say on a fairly even keel to start with. We've chosen even two of the more expensive goalkeepers. Not much in it there.
There's no point going for a cheap goalkeeper, I don't think, who's going to concede lots of goals because it's just a waste of time and pointless, literally.
France probably predicted to go a little bit further, though. So maybe you're edging it so far. Now, we've both gone for back threes. Should we just hammer off our back three, give some loose rationale, and then the debate can ensue? So who have you gone for in your back three?
Okay, so I've obviously gone for three fullbacks. I think that's absolutely the way to go in every fantasy football game. And I've gone for Luke Shaw, Thomas Meunier, and I've gone for Jose Gaya as well of Spain. Now, it's a bit of a tough one. I've gone for Thomas Meunier. Let's explain my reasoning with him firstly, because I think he's one of my more rash picks, I would say, because he's not had a particularly fantastic season for Borussia Dortmund. But that is playing in a back four at Dortmund. And when he plays as a wing back under Martinez, he's so much more effective in that 3-4-3 system. They've been playing it for 5 years now. Everybody knows their roles. 10 wins out of 10 in qualifying, 40 goals scored, 3 conceded. I just think they waltz qualifying. He's an outstanding wing back under Martinez. I don't think he's a sensational player, but you think back to that World Cup 2018, 4 goal involvements in 5 games. In the March qualifiers this year for the World Cup, his numbers pretty much doubled across the board playing for Belgium compared to when he plays for Dortmund. So although he's not been great for his club, I'm anticipating Meunier to be better for Belgium. And he was relatively cheap as well at 5.5 million comparatively to some of the other players.
I mean, I've gone for Tierney in that first position. Okay. And that is because firstly, I love him, so maybe it's a little bit heart overhead. Secondly, I do think that the Scottish players have been a little bit underpriced, given that they beat the Czech Republic three times. I don't know if it was this year and last year, but in their last three fixtures, they've claimed three wins from the Czech Republic, who, of course, are in their group as well. I think Croatia are a vastly inferior proposition from the 2018 World Cup. Of course, Rakitic has retired, although some old heads remain, like Luka Modric. And Kovacic, of course, is still very much in his mid-20s, so he's in his pomp. But yeah, he's been very good of late, Kieran Tierney. I think he's their top assister in World Cup qualifications with three, albeit I think all three might have arrived against the Faroe Islands. But I think that gives you some insight into how he actually plays in that Scotland
but will he
team.
Play as, will he play as a left wing back, or will he play as the left-sided centre-back?
Wow, this is a very good question. He plays as a left-sided centre-back, but it's been quite interesting under Steve Clarke that, you know, McTominay and Tierney have had license to step into the midfield. There's some more defensive-minded players that cover for them. You know, John McGinn plays a little bit deeper for country than club. And Kieran Tierney has been the underlap specialist for Steve Clarke. And he's actually putting up more key passes per 90 than Andrew Robertson, who is the same price, by the way. They're both 5 million, so it could be the toss of a coin. But just based on numbers alone, I think Tierney is quietly the more threatening going forward. I think that's a little tactic that they've worked in there. You know, Robertson dragging his man out, opening up that space for KT just to run into with those tree trunk-sized legs. I mean, he's never been a huge goal threat, so I don't anticipate him scoring an awful lot. But at that price, in a group where I think they can overachieve, I think he's a solid first pick.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I mean, Luke Shaw, I've also probably picked a little bit high overhead here, but he did create more chances than any fullback in Europe this season, playing for a Manchester United team that at times looked fairly bereft of creativity. Mm. And I also I've got a feeling there's a decent chance that Luke Shaw might take right-sided corners for England at the Euros if he plays, because he'll be one of the few left-footers in the squad. And I think they might try and utilise his in-swing and delivery. He's taken every corner available pretty much to him for Manchester United this season, and his delivery's been pretty good. So if he starts, I think he might actually take a couple of set pieces, which is an interesting little addition for that role, because England score so many goals from set pieces.
Well, it was 9 from 12 goals, wasn't it, at the 2018 World Cup?
Exactly. Now, the issue with Shaw is there isn't a guarantee of him starting. You know, if we decide to play a back three, I think Southgate might end up going with Chilwell as a left wing back, just because he's played that way under Thomas Tuchel for the last 3 months. But if Shaw starts, and I think Shaw should start, then he is going to create chances. And who better to be on the end of them than Harry Kane? So I think Shaw is not a bad pickup for sort of 6 million in here either.
Mm. You know what? I said that clean sheets were a fallacy, but I've hedged my bets. I've hedged my bets with my second defender, which is Bonucci. Because I looked at Italy and I honestly thought if they can overcome Turkey, I can see them getting three clean sheets in their group.
Yeah, it's a good shout.
Because they've been so impressive.
You've doubled down, though. You've doubled down. It's either a risk or it's a huge success with Donnarumma in goal as well.
They've been so impressive since Mancini took over. And they have got a pretty watertight defence. Bonucci and Chiellini have still played, actually. Mancini has also played when they've gone to like a back three at times. But it's still been very much the old guard in the centre of defence, with some new additions in front of them. You know, Barella, Zaniolo, of course, prior to his injury, Stefano Sensi. So there's much more legs in midfield than there was when Mancini took over. And of course, he did come in after that playoff loss to Sweden when they missed out on a World Cup for the first time since the late 50s. So it has been a complete transformation. Bonucci's been a big part of that. Has had a few muscle issues for Juventus, but obviously, so maybe I anticipate him being rested at some point, maybe week three, you know, if they do make a good start. So Bonucci is someone I anticipate rotating, but I just feel like if there's a nailed on clean sheet anywhere, it might be with the Italians. But yeah, I do concede that goes against my earlier logic.
I was very tempted by Emerson, it has to be said, in that Italian backline. I think he might get quite a few minutes under Mancini. And I think he, as sort of an attacking fullback, one of the more attacking fullbacks at the Euros, is a decent shout for that role. Because my third choice, and this is me and you potentially going head-to-head here, Spain.
Woof.
I was really torn over. It's a toss of a coin, to be honest with you, between Jordi Alba and Jose Gaya. I went with Gaya, but ooh, I can see the argument for Alba.
Yeah.
I think there's... In my head, he starts Gaya. I am very torn, though, in there. I'm very, very torn. I just think that seeing the rest of the squad, the way it was picked, you know, Aspi, Alba, Laporte. I think Laporte is probably going to start. I think Aspi's going to start. I think they might go with Gaia, just a little bit more pace, even though Jordi Alba had such a good end of the season with Barcelona. I think they might go Gaia, but it's toss of a coin, really, isn't it, between these two? So I've a bit risky here.
Yeah, and it'll probably become clearer after the warm-up games, right, this weekend. Yeah. We'll probably know a little bit more then, because he has been very experimental, Luis Enrique, with his back four in the UEFA Nations League, in World Cup qualification. Like, I only went for Jordi Alba because he has excelled in the World Cup qualification games. I think he got 3 assists in his last 2. And I thought, okay, Enrique's not going to ignore that sort of form, at least in game week 1. But I agree, it could be... The back four could change quite heavily if they get off to a good start.
I think it might change game to game.
So maybe it's not the best having someone from Spain in the back four, back three, whatever we're playing.
Unless it's Laporte. You know Laporte's going to start. Yeah, because of the depth nations. There.
Yeah, I mean, Porro was starting, wasn't he? Llorente, Eric Garcia has started more than I thought he would, given his limited minutes at Manchester City. Of course, a couple of those names have... Well, Porro's dropped out, right?
I think it'll be Pau Torres and Laporte as the centre-back pairing. I think Aspi might start as the right-back. I really think Aspi might start as the right-back. And that, and then left-back, Jordi Alba or Jose Gaya. So maybe pick Laporte if you're going to pick a Spanish centre-back in here, because he's almost nailed on.
Yeah. Right, we'll see how Jordi Alba does week one then, because I do believe that he will start. But we'll see. Right, moving on to our midfield then, because we're both ripped through our back three.
Yeah.
I'm pretty pleased with mine.
So,
it
very
is very, very attacking. I think clearly we've given up on some quality in defence, in the central areas, to make way for these boys. My first one is KDB. Who's your first one?
My first one's Bruno. I think you're going to have to change KDB. I think KDB is a huge call from you.
Because of his eye?
I just don't see him starting that first game in 10 days with a fractured eye socket and a fractured nose. I think that's what Billy Joe Saunders, that fractured orbital bone against bloody Canelo. So I don't see KDB starting that game. He's going to be in incredible recovery if he managed to pull it off. So I've gone for Bruno Fernandes. Everybody knows that I love Bruno Fernandes. It's probably
Even though they're in the group of death?
Yeah, I have no problem with them being the group of death and Bruno still creating chances at all. I mean, he's created the most chances of any player in Europe this season. And I think with Cristiano Ronaldo on the end of it, João Felix on the end of it, he's just got, in my opinion, he's probably the best creative 10 at the Euros. Mm. So I've just picked because of that, Bruno Fernandes. And at £9 million, I think that's pretty good value for a player of Bruno's level.
Yeah, like De Bruyne is more expensive. And my thinking was, like, De Bruyne was one of my first picks, right? And if he doesn't make it, it's a simple swap for what any other midfielder. I think he's the most expensive midfielder in the game. And it's unsurprising, really, isn't it? Given that he was averaging a goal involvement every game over his last 6 games for his country. And Belgium were just at their free-flowing best in qualification and at the UEFA Nations League, weren't they? 40 goals in qualification. I think they were the only side that bettered England's return of 37. And 16 in the UEFA Nations League group that had England in. England only scored 7. So they've been fairly dominant. I think Roberto Martinez has only lost, since he was installed in 2016, has only lost 4 games. And I know he's had a golden generation at his disposal, but that is a pretty impressive record nonetheless. So I am worried about the eye socket. But you can make changes right up until kickoff. I'm hoping that things, you know, bit more clarity after this weekend. Mm. So we will see. But someone I am very sure on is my next pick. And that is Memphis Depay, who counts as a midfielder. Yes, okay. Please sign me up.
Hmm. Okay, so you've gone Memphis as your next pick. My next pick, I think, has to be in every person's fan team selection. Cannot believe he's as cheap as he is and listed as a midfielder. And that's Serge Gnabry. Serge Gnabry at £9 million listed in the midfield is an absolute shambles. 15 goals in 20 caps for Germany. This guy is unbelievable for Bayern. He's even better for Germany because half the time he's playing through the middle as their central striker with Timo Werner on the left, coming in off the left, and Leroy Sané coming in off the right. I think they scored 30 goals in qualifying, and I'm pretty sure Serge Gnabry got 10 of them. So he's scoring one of every three Germany goals is being scored by Serge Gnabry in qualifying for this. 10 goals in 20 starts for Bayern. If he is played through the middle by Joachim Löw, which I think he probably will be, it's ridiculous he's been included as a central midfielder. So I just think at 9 million, he's an absolute no-brainer with the amount of goals he scores. Mm-hmm. Although he is in the group of death and Germany might struggle to get out of it, I think it's worth the risk.
Germany stuttered in the UEFA Nations League as well, didn't they? Not been totally sold on them coming into this. Although qualification, I think they did finish above the Netherlands by a couple of points. So we're fairly solid in that, as you'd expect. But I mean, Memphis Depay, I think a lot of people still unfairly label him, you know, the Manchester United flop. He has been brilliant for Lyon for a number of seasons now. 32 goals and assists in 33 league starts this campaign. Pretty much single-handedly kept them in the race for the top four towards the tail end of the season. And also a different beast when he puts that Netherlands shirt on. I mean, no wonder he wants to play for Koeman at Barcelona. Koeman pretty much, when he rejuvenated the whole Orange project after, what, the Hiddink era, the Blind era, which were both hideous. They were both a travesty, by the way. He pretty much rebuilt the side around Memphis Depay as a central striker. Now, he's got 4 goals and assists in his last 3 World Cup qualifiers. So he's coming into this on the back of some decent form from an international perspective as well as a domestic perspective. Although, De Boer only won 4 of his first 9.
I'm convinced about De Boer.
Yeah, their group is very forgiving, though. Ukraine, okay. Austria, and North Macedonia. And all the games are going to be played in Amsterdam, by the by. So I think they coast through the group. Maybe not coast. I can see them finishing second behind Ukraine now, I've said that. I can see Memphis Depay getting a lot of goals, but then I'll have to strongly reconsider when we get to the knockout stages.
Because I think Depay's a good pick in there.
Yeah, I am very happy with Depay. And he's also, you know, free agent in the summer, has to put himself in the shop window, pretty much a striker playing in central midfield. I'm lapping that up. Similar vibes for the next one, really, which is Jadon Sancho for me. Ooh. Although has a virus heading into the last
big
round of friendlies.
Brave call from you that, yeah, Jadon Sancho.
And he might not necessarily start. So another one I've got to keep an eye on. I pretty much, you know, I've gone for a few players that I maybe like more than... I've gone for a bit more head over heart than I realised, actually, revisiting this list. But who's your final midfielder? Then I'll explain why.
I've got two. Jayden. We've got two more midfielders each. We've got two more midfielders each.
I've got... I'm playing a 3-4-3, right? So I've got De Bruyne, Depay, and then I'm getting to Sancho.
Okay, so your next pick is Sancho. I'll do my English pick then. I've gone for a player who I think will definitely start. I would start Sancho. I really don't think Gareth Southgate's going to start Sancho. I think that's very unlikely, sadly. So I've gone for a player who I think will definitely start, and that's Mason Mount, who is in the form of his life for Chelsea and in amongst sort of the top 5 creators in Europe this season from open play. In fact, I think he sits 5th on the list of chances created from open play in Europe this season. He's going to probably, in my opinion, start every game under Southgate in that 10 role. I think Southgate sees...
Even if he goes back, even if he reverts to a back three?
Yeah, 100%. Even if he reverts into a back three, then he'll play as one of the wide players, I think. I just think that he is in such good form for his club, and in nearly every qualifying game we've seen him feature under Gareth Southgate. So, for me, it's a no-brainer Mason Mount starts for England, and I think he'll be sensational at the tournament. He's one of the players to watch, I think, at Euro 2020.
See, I agree. I think he is going to have a good tournament. I think an awful lot of responsibility is going to be put on his shoulders, which he's shown he can handle at club level, right? But I'm not sure he's someone whose performance is necessarily translating to maximum points on a fantasy football game. Because he's a bit.
But when it's Harry Kane on the end of chances and not Timo Werner, I think he stands a better chance. I'll say
that is it's a very legitimate point. He is all action, but numbers weren't astronomical for Chelsea. Like, what he did really well was, you know, he was tactically versatile. He did a lot of harrying, a lot of defensive pressures, didn't he? Like, if those sort of things were recognised, yes, I completely agree. But I've gone for Jadon Sancho, who's pure, unadulterated output. Yes. I mean, 19 goals and assists and 24 league starts for Dortmund. He has only started two of the last six games at the UEFA Nations for England.
And he's struggled for England. He's not looked good when he's played for England under Southgate recently.
Yeah, but the 4-3-3 should theoretically suit him more than any other system that Southgate has sort of deployed before, right? So if he sticks with that, Jadon Sancho remains in my team. If I'm seeing the back three come into play in the final warm-up games, you know what? I think both of us might be in a little bit of trouble. I know Southgate played floating eights at the 2018 World Cup, didn't he? Which was Dele Alli and Jesse Lingard. So Mason Mount might be deployed in one of those roles. I definitely think he stands more of a chance in that system than Jadon Sancho playing.
I just think Southgate will probably be looking at, you know, Chelsea playing three at the back wing-back system and Mason Mount still being extremely effective and thinking, I can just ask Mason to do the same job he does for his club. And if I want to play the four, I can just ask him to play as the more attacking eight. So I think in either system, Mount is going to be very comfortable, which is why I think he'll start so many games under Southgate.
Yeah, I mean, Declan Rice is going to have to put in a shift in that midfield then, isn't he?
Well, I don't think he'll play as one of the midfield two, Mount. I think he would play as one of the more attacking players.
On the left-hand side, he's a little bit, hasn't he?
The same way he plays for Chelsea, where obviously Jorginho and Kante sitting behind him. I think it's probably going to be Hendo and Rice, and then Mount having a free role in front of them with two forwards.
Okay, you've cleared it on your research. A lot of England prep for the We Need to Talk videos, and you're talking me into it. You're talking me into a Mason Mount.
Who's your final midfielder?
Being in your side. No, we've gone through my three midfielders. De Bruyne,
You've got four midfielders, mate. You said you're playing a 3-4-3.
Sancho. You're right, I have. Let me scroll back. I have gone for Gareth Bale, who I actually switched out for Christian Eriksen, which is why I have not acknowledged him, despite you asking multiple times. Not got huge rationale for this other than him being so cheap. He was only £6 million. Mm. And I actually thought, you know, Wales, very tough group. They've had a tumultuous time off the pitch with regards to their preparation owing to Giggs's legal saga. But, yeah, they're effectively putting all their eggs in Bale's basket. So he's got to perform. Yeah. They're going to cater the formation, the personnel to him to accentuate his strengths. So I'm hoping for, you know, one last hurrah from Gareth, who does absolutely turn it on at international level. So,
okay.
And the fact, again, that he's a midfielder, he's registered as a midfielder, he stands every chance of getting a couple goals. I think it's not a bad pickup for £6 million, but it's one of those ones, let's see how match week one and two goes. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's a brave call. I'll put it that way. I mean, I've gone for Chiesa, who I think is going to be really, really utilised well by Mancini across that front line. Extremely versatile. Like we've already said, they're in one of the easier groups. I think, like you said at the start, I can see them putting a fair few goals past the likes of Switzerland, Turkey and Wales. And, you know, when he's played for Juve this season, he's been super effective. 16 goal involvements in 28 Serie A starts. He got 5 and 6 in the Champions League as well. So I think Mancini probably looked at that and thought, do you know what, in the crunch games, he might step up for me. And I think he'll be a pretty key player for Mancini in that attacking three. So, I've gone for Chiesa. But again, I've pretty much picked him because he was the cheapest of all my midfielders. At just £8 million, and I think that's quite cheap for a player of his caliber.
No, I think that is it's another good nod. Maybe a little bit more of a I don't know if he's a nailed-on star, but it'll be interesting to see that how that Italy forward line lines up, right, with Ciro Immobile, obviously the rooster from Torino. What's his name? Andrea Belotti. You know, there might be a bit of rotation in those quarters, but Yeah, I think an outside bet, but a good one at that.
I think he probably goes for Insigne as well in that front line. I was really torn. I was close to picking Insigne.
Who's been great, hasn't he, for Napoli this season?
I think he might go Insigne, Chiesa, Immobile as that front three. So I was kind of torn between Insigne and Chiesa, but I've come down on the side of Chiesa just because of those big game impacts in the Champions League.
Right, okay, we move on to a forward line then. Business end of this chat. I'm just going to reel off my three and then we can go through them one by one if you do the same. I've gone Lukaku. I've gone Same. Lewandowski.
Same.
I've gone Burak Yilmaz.
Oh, we differ only over Burak Yilmaz, where I've gone João Felix.
Right, okay, interesting. I've got to say, my knowledge of the Portuguese setup, not on point. Because, of course, André Silva, Ronaldo, it feels competitive at that end of the pitch.
Yeah, I think that's probably what you'll see is a front three of João Felix, Silva and Ronaldo. Which Silva it is, I'm not too sure yet. Will it be Bernardo? Will it be André? Toss of a coin, maybe? But I definitely think João Felix is going to start. Bruno Fernandes will also play in that sort of hole. I think he's quite fluid, isn't he? He's quite fluid, Santos, between that 4-3-3 and the 4-4-2. And when he plays the 4-4-2, it tends to be Ronaldo with João Felix playing off him. And sort of Bernardo Silva and Bruno as kind of floating tens come eights. If he does go for the 4-3-3, I think you'll see Felix kind of drift a little bit further to the left, I would say. And he hasn't started loads of games this season for Diego Simeone. He's only got 14 league starts, which surprised me a little bit, given that, you know, Angel Correa is up there sort of 29, 30 starts in all competitions, or maybe even in La Liga. But nevertheless, I think João Felix will be a vital contributor to this Portugal side. And Portugal have been great recently, man. Like, they won the Nations League, they come into this as the champions, and they always perform in the Euros. I don't know what it is, but they're just in the Euros, aren't they? They haven't failed to reach the quarterfinals since the tournament's restructure in 1996. So they've got to the quarterfinal stage every single season every single Euros that we've seen since 96. So I think they probably do it again. The squad is unbelievably strong. I really like the back line. The forward line's very good. And I think João Felix, when he plays, he contributes goals. Like I said, 14 starts in the league, but he did contribute 12 goals in those 14 starts. He's had a couple of injuries, that coronavirus. Hopefully he's over that, because I think he'll have a big part to play in this Portugal setup.
Okay, fair enough. So, yeah, let's hope that he fares a little bit better for country than club. Mm. I mean, Lukaku, I think I speak for both of us when I say a relatively easy decision. Yes. 59 goals in 91 caps as Belgium's all-time top goal scorer. What a sickening record that is. 35 goals and assists in 32 league starts for Inter this term. Won the MVP award, didn't he? And 8 goals and assists in his last 7 appearances for Belgium. He plays really well with whoever's up there, doesn't he? Dries Mertens, KDB, and the likes. It's just a joy to watch. Lewandowski, I'm not fully sold on. Only 9
Me
million.
Neither.
Only 9 million. I think his price probably reflects that, you know, fan team are a little bit reticent about him as well. You know, Poland might struggle, but they have Slovakia game week one. And this isn't like any other sort of fantasy football, is it? A lot of my picks based very much on who people are facing in their first game, because then you can kind of change. You get a couple of changes here and there, more changes in between rounds. I think you get a wild card introduced at various points. We put a link to all the rules in the descriptions below, by the way, or in the description below, not more than one description. So yeah, Lewandowski
I'm worried about this one. If he wasn't nine, I wouldn't have picked him. I was looking at some of his stats coming into this one, and he scored 63 goals for Poland, which I thought, bloody hell, 63 goals, absolutely unbelievable. He's only scored 2 goals at major tournaments, Lewandowski, which shocked me. He was 12th in the scoring charts in qualifying, not putting up huge numbers there. But then it's just that domestic form draws you in, doesn't it? Like, to break Gerd Müller's Bundesliga record, 53 goals in 49 games for club and country this season, is like, oh, I can't not pick him at 9 mil.
Yeah, he's exceptional in qualification as well, isn't he?
Yeah. But I just don't think Poland do well. And his record at major tournaments really, really concerns me. So I think this is a risky pick. One of the more risky picks in the team, Lewandowski. But 9 mil had to be done.
Yeah, the group stage is constantly their stumbling block, isn't it? I think they kind of reach their ceiling when they get to the group stages, unfortunately. I'm not sure what his supply line is looking like in that side right now either. Now, some of my subs, I could probably bring... Oh, I almost forgot. Yilmaz. Bloody Yilmaz. The Renaissance man. I mean, it's impossible to find another league-winning striker who scored 16 goals for 4.5 million on this game. Like, he is probably one of the bargains to be had. And the job, the restoration job of Turkey in the last 18 months has been pretty sizable. Because I remember when they were playing under Romanian manager Lucescu for probably the same period of time, 18 months, they were absolutely horrendous. And now I think there's a quiet confidence, you know, emanating from Turkey about their chances of upsetting the odds once more. Of course, I think they finished, what, third at the 2002 World Cup. It's the same manager who led them to third. He's back in the hot seat. Gunes, I think. I can't really pronounce his name. Back in the hot seat. And he looks like he's overperforming once more. They've got solid base. And, you know, Calhanoglu was Serie A's exceptional chance creator. I think he put up 100 key passes. And Burak Yilmaz will be there, you know, deadly as ever to hopefully finish them off. But I think it's worth having him in your side, if even, you know, so you can stop the midfield with a slightly better caliber of player, right?
Yeah, I actually don't mind this Turkey team. I think this Turkey team's actually pretty solid with the likes of Soyuncu at the base of it, with Demiral in there as well. If Calhanoglu can get those set pieces firing like he did this season, Cengiz Under not had a great campaign at Leicester, but, you know, still pretty impressive in terms of what he does for Turkey. I think they're going to be okay, and I think Yilmaz will probably score a couple goals. So at that price, I agree. I think he's a good pickup.
One of those ones that you might address after the group stage. Yet again, a lot of caveats in our answers, but this is a different ball game, isn't it? We're not playing a season-long fantasy football here. Week by week, every game matters. Yeah, my bench, pretty poor. You know, Galassi, obviously RB Leipzig's goalkeeper. I think one of the cheapest goalkeepers in the game at 4 mil. Lindelof, who I think is maybe a solid rotation option. And Christian Eriksen, actually, who's the Danes' go-to man, as well as Celik from Turkey, who had a great season with Lille. Any noteworthy names on your bench? I've got kind of a solid, if unspectacular.
Absolutely not,
lineup.
Mate. I literally picked my bench just to mug you off. So I've got Craig Gordon, Grant Legend. Hanley, and Billy Gilmore. A bit of a notable one. And then I was just trying to find players with a max value of 4 at this point. So Timochuk from Ukraine has also been selected as one of my defenders. But yeah, my bench is pants, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've probably got a little bit more work to do. But I reckon, owing to De Bruyne...
I think if we combined our teams, we would do pretty well.
Yeah, owing to De Bruyne and Sancho, I think I might, at the end of these warm-up games, have a little bit more work to do, but quietly confident about the rest of my side. So, yeah, where do you think some of your weaknesses lie? Any major concerns now that we've visited your full XI?
Yeah, I think I would be considering the Gaia and Alba one again, potentially looking elsewhere for that. I'm still really concerned about Lewandowski, whether he actually turns up at a major tournament or not. I'm 50-50 over that one, but I'm pretty punchy on Serge Gnabry. I think he has a good tournament. Pretty punchy on Mason Mount. And I think Romelu Lukaku, for me, probably favourite for the Golden Boot. So at 11.5 million, 2 million cheaper than Harry Kane, that feels like a no-brainer.
England a favourite for the tournaments, by the way. The tournament, by the way, which
I know.
I was astounded at.
That's what happens when you've got two teams in the Champions League final, one in the Europa League final, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, that is true. Gareth Bale as well. I mean, they've got Switzerland in the first game. The Swiss, quite resolute at the back. That could be a really boring game unless sort of his Euros form of old turns up as well. So I might be redressing my home midfield apart from the
Gareth
pie,
Bale's
but we'll see.
A funny one. I'm not sure about Gareth Bale's inclusion, given the problems that they've had off the pitch recently. Switzerland aren't mugs either. Like, that back line is pretty decent. And if Granit Xhaka can find a bit of that form, Akanji can turn up for once.
There's just something magic about him, though, at international level. And he did finish the season very, very strongly. 10 Premier League goals in 11 starts. Like, he was just starting to look like an attacking, proposition again, wasn't he?
So
let's hope that form is continues into the Euros even. I mean, that's brought us to the end of the show. Like I said at the start, if you want to play along, visit the link in the description. You, of course, have to be 18 plus to play along. T's and C's do apply. And if you use the website to bet on anything other than this, then please bet sensibly. Joseph, what other content are Football Daily producing right now?
There's content every single day. But you can go and watch my reaction to England's seven names that got chopped on We Need to Talk. That came out on Tuesday. I have to say I was pretty delighted with Gareth Southgate's squad selections and the inclusion of Trent Alexander-Arnold. What about you? Anything people should go watch?
Come on over and watch. When is this going out? It's going out tomorrow. Go and watch the 15 most valuable free agents that we ranked over on Euro Football Daily.
There we go.
Thank you, guys. Like this video, subscribe to the channel with notifications on, and we'll be back revisiting our sides and how they're doing in the coming future. So let me know whose side you're on at the moment. Is it Team Joe? Is it Team Hamill? Get in the comments.
It's coming home. Bye.